Hi, this is Michael Carino from the Digital Media Cast Experiment, and I'm talking with Stephen Guerra from the Beat Baseball Podcast.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve from the Beat Baseball Podcast. You're listening to a special broadcast of the Beat Baseball Podcast, where we're interviewing Michael Carino from the Digital Media Cast Experiment. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and as always, you can visit us on the web at www.beatbaseball.org. And now, without further ado, Michael Carino. What was the first podcast you listened to?
The first podcast I actually listened to, you have to understand, I come from Akron, and Akron is the polymer capital of the world. So I was going through this list of podcasts, and I'd just been turned on to podcasts a couple of hours earlier, and I found this thing that said polya something or another, and I thought, oh, this is going to be about polymer science. Well, what I found out it was is polyamorphic, and that's the study of people having more than one wife or partner or whatever.
And in polygamy?
Yeah, it was kind of like polygamy, and it wasn't about that kind of rubber. After that, then, though, I did find, at the time I got into this, is right when the Pope was starting to die, and I found the Catholic Insider, and so I officially, my first podcast, my real podcast was Catholic Insider, and then, a lot of people always say, well, Adam Curry was the first one, but to be honest with you, Adam Curry... Well, keep in mind, I'm Adam Curry's age, and Adam Curry started very early, and when he did, he was on MTV, and I think that we used to think of him as the long-haired douchebag on MTV. And
okay.
I'm from the Midwest. I mean, what the hell do we know? So when I kept on running across his name in this new medium that I had just found hours earlier, and it was Adam Curry, I was really reluctant to listen to it, and all I could think of was, it's that douchebag from MTV. Well, as it turned out, he had a thing called the Daily Source Code, which he still has now.
Right.
Well, I'm a programmer. I'm thinking to myself, oh, well, Daily Source Code, this is cool. This is great. So I get this thing. I think to myself, maybe there's hope for this guy. Maybe he's a little bit more than just that MTV guy. And the first thing he does is a mashup. It took me 3 days to get through this. And the only reason I ever listened to that first Daily Source Code was because every other podcast I would listen to, they'd always say something, Adam Curry, Daily Source Code, Adam Curry, and all the websites would point to this thing. And so, okay, I'll go through the whole thing. Well, as it turned out, I became a religious listener to the Daily Source Code for very many months. And I really do think that Adam Curry is not a douchebag from MTV. He used to be from MTV, but I think that he's doing a lot of good by bringing podcasting to us. And then I've also moved on to other podcasts as well.
Sure.
But those were the Catholic Insider, and then I think that Adam Curry and a couple of other ones, like a couple of tech podcasts that I started listening to. I was really surprised that they had anything that was worthwhile in tech, because until then, it seemed like anything that you had that was media-wise in tech was always really general. It's sort of like, I knew that already.
Right.
I knew that already, too, Like, oh, tell me something new. Like when CNN would say, and we have some big epidemic. I knew about that already because I get that stuff from the NASA search bulletins,
Right. What was your first setup in doing a podcast? And what caused you to decide that you wanted to do your own? What was the spark of interest?
Oh, God. Well... First of all, I come from media, and the first
and what form of media do you come from?
Dunt, all of them. What happened was I got a degree. I first started at the University of Akron as a computer science major, but they had all the classes really early in the morning, so I kind of failed out of that within the first year. So I decided to go into mass media production, which had a whole bunch of stuff about media, and I wanted to work for a radio station. So finally, after cramming 4 years into five, I got my degree, and the last thing I got was an internship at the local radio station, WAKRWONE, here in Akron. And when I did that, I met up with a couple of guys, and they got me a job there. And I graduated, and I got my first job at WAKR. And the first thing that happened was we all went out to lunch to celebrate my getting in there. And they started talking about the fact that media was broken and radio sucks. Well,
radio does suck.
I just had worked all this time to try to get into radio, and what did I find out? That it's broken, it's bad. And over the years, I ended up staying in radio for about a year longer, and then worked with advertising agencies, so I was always very, you know, into the media. But the thing was is that we found out that there were a lot of issues with the way radio and media in general worked. And but the only thing was is it was the only thing we had. When I heard about podcasting, to me, because I understood how the internet works, because that's what I do for a living, to me, this seemed like a huge potential cure for what was ailing the media. This is why I was attracted to it in the first place, and I liked what I was seeing with it. And where I heard about it was actually at my cousin's birthday party. It was actually his kid's birthday party, and he's a computer geek too. He works with me sometimes, and we're all sitting around, you know, drinking while the kids are enjoying themselves, and someone says, "Hey, Mike, you ever heard of this podcasting thing? You're into media and you're into networking." And I said, "No, I never heard of it." They showed it to me. I took my kids home immediately. I put them to bed. I got online and I started looking at this stuff. And from that point forward, I knew I wanted to do a podcast. I just wasn't sure how. That was in March of 2005. By July, the first digital media cast experiment went out. And the week before, I also was doing one with Chris Jensen called the Digital Media Cast DigiCast. But I could see right away that this was going to be good, and we made the Digital Media Cast Network, which is a couple of other vendors and Logic Assistants, and
right.
We decided we're going to do it. And since then, I've been involved with several podcasts.
Tell us the other podcasts you're involved with now.
Well, there's the Digital Media Cast Network, DigiCast, which kind of went on hiatus over the Christmas break. Now it's March, so that's not a very good excuse. We're going to be getting back into that soon. The only problem was is that the day jobs got in the way. But that's basically kind of a short, kind of like 5 to 7 minute thing once a week, and we talk more toward the conventional media people, who, by the way, if you try to get people into podcasting, somebody who knows nothing about media is a lot easier to convince than the conventional media people.
Sure.
There's the Digital Media Cast Experiment, which from week to week is good or bad. I'm not sure, but I try a whole bunch of different things there. As soon as I get used to one way of doing things, I usually mix it up and do something else just because I get restless and I try new things. I try new microphones. I try new setups, recorders, and stuff like that. And some of the shows suck, and some of them, I guess, are okay. You know, but I try to say, okay, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I did it. And, you know, if you like that, then this is how you should do it. And if you don't,
Sure. Wait
till I do something else, and maybe you'll like that. I make the mistakes so you don't have to. Then I'm also involved with a thing called the CapraCast, which is actually a podcast for the Capra organization, which is kind of like the Chamber of Commerce for aerospace technology companies up at NASA Glenn Research Center. Now, the thing that's beautiful about that is that a lot of times when it comes to these contracts that are done at NASA, they're done by companies that are national and sometimes international. In fact, right now I'm working with several of them from the Beltway, as we call it, you know, Washington, D.C., because that's how the way government contracts work. And then I have two of them that I do with my wife. She decided to jump on board because either that or she'd become a podcast widow, or she had been a podcast widow, and so this is how she brought her husband back from the dead. And that's called Armchair Survivor and Armchair Apprentice. And those two shows actually have become the most popular of the ones we do. And in fact, one of the things that's cool about those is that Logic Assistants has been wanting to get into a media delivery system, and we use Armchair Apprentice and Armchair Survivor to beat up on the network to just see how far you can push things and how, you know, what it takes to be able to deliver this stuff without maxing out the system. So I've been very interested. You know, I always keep my ear to the ground to see what the Libsyn guys are doing, too, because I think they have the same types of problems. In fact, I met them once, and we shared some ideas while we were in California and in North Carolina.
Tell me about Chris Jensen. Tell me, because, I mean, he's the voice that goes into your intro.
Yes.
I'm Michael Carino from the Digital Media Cast Experiment, and welcome to the show.
You're part of the Digital Media Cast Experiment with your host from Logica Systems, Michael Carino.
If you're one of those people who are trying to figure out how this podcasting thing works, whether you're a podcaster, audio person, software developer, network admin, or just an innocent bystander, you'll want to check out our new podcast. We'll be discussing issues from network security to podcasting personalities, bandwidth to audio gear, software, hardware, and even marketing. How do I know all of this stuff? Well, I don't. Not yet. I'll be going through it with you and figuring it out as we go along, mistakes and all. So come on over and check it out at dmcex.com.
dmcex.com. You've been part of the Digital Media Cast Experiment with Michael Carino from Logica Systems. dmcex.com. Thanks for listening. dmcex.com.
In all the shows that I've ever listened to, I've never heard him.
Well, Chris Jensen, first of all, he is actually on the Digital Media Cast Digicast, which is on a different feed from the Digital Media Cast Experiment, but you can get to it from my site. Chris Jensen is an audio producer who I've heard of for years, and I finally met a couple of years ago when I did a voiceover spot for an advertising agency. And he's been in the biz for a long time. He's an excellent producer. One of our sponsors, the Highway Channel, uses Chris a lot. He probably has one of the cleanest sounds. He's got this cool little studio in Bath, Ohio. I love to go to because it's nice and quiet up there, beautiful sound, lots of cool microphones, and he's fast. And in fact, one of the things I find really entertaining and one of the things I liked working with him, I wish I could learn how to talk.
Yeah, no, first day with a new tongue.
Yeah, I know. is that once he would record the stuff, I would sit behind him while he's working on Pro Tools doing this stuff, and he's just like a flurry of activity. I don't like that and stuff like that, and he's doing these edits, and first of all, the edits are done really well, and then the second thing is he'll sit there and just say, no, that sucks, I don't like that, you know. It's sort of like, Chris, I wish I could suck as bad as you do, you know.
Yeah.
And he's doing all this cool stuff, and the stuff he comes out with is really clean. It's a real testament to how well he does and what a feel he has for this. I had mentioned the Highway Channel, and the Highway Channel actually does these television stations for service plazas. In fact, you might be getting them out in your way, neck of the woods in New Jersey and stuff like that sometime soon. And what the Highway Channel, the problem you run into with that is that these service plazas are usually made out of concrete and stone and brick and stuff like that, and sound reverberates all over the place. You put a guy with a low voice in there, like the announcer for the Highway Channel, David Bennett, and the voice just booms all over the place, and you can't hear anything but, you know. So what Chris is able to do, and we've got a couple of these set up on the Ohio Turnpike, is that you can tell all of the stuff that Chris produced and the stuff that everyone else produced, because Chris's stuff cuts through the din of the highway or of the service plaza. He's just an excellent producer. And then the other thing too is that Chris is also smart enough to realize, which it's interesting how many people aren't getting this, that the new way of looking at media has to be addressed. Now, the people who are in media right now, there are a lot of them out there who are saying, well, this is the way it's been done all these years, and so I don't have to learn anything new because it's not going to change. Bullcrap. It's going to change, and Chris decided he wasn't going to get left behind. He wanted to get in on this, and so he and I have been working together on Digital Media Cast Network since about April of last year, of 2005.
Wow.
Hello, I'm Wichita Rutherford from 5 Minutes with Wichita, and I'm here to tell you about the Podcast 411 podcast. Now, Rob, he interviews other podcasters to find out what they've learned about doing a podcast, and it's been described as inside the actor's studio, except it's for podcasts. His past guests include Adam Curry, he's the Podfather, Senator John Edwards, C.C. Chapman, PK&J, Bibb and Yes, Chris Rockwell, and yours truly, Wichita Rutherford. That's just naming a few of them. Now, if you want to learn more about podcasting or podcasters, then you go over and visit them at podcast411.com. And remember, listen different with Podcast 411. It's just so precious.
You're listening to the Beat Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Guerin. And during this bi-monthly show, you'll learn everything you need to know about the sport of Beat Baseball. how is it played, who plays it, and interviews with influential figures in the sport of beat baseball and the National Beat Baseball Association. The Beat Baseball Podcast is brought to you by TechRS Technologies, computing made easy provided you have patience. Reach them on the web at www.techrs.com. Let's play too. What other podcasts do you listen to now? I mean, what's the top five podcasts you listen to now?
Well, of course, the Beat Baseball guy. I listen to. Actually, you know,
and we thank you. You're our sole listener, I think. Well, I think everybody else that listens to it has listened to it via CD.
Well, you know, what's interesting for those of you who are listening to this, if you listen, go back into Steve's archives.
No, they can't.
Oh, they can't. Okay. Well,
I removed them all.
I have copies. I'm a pack rat.
And Mike can be reached at participate@dmcex.com.
Well, the thing was is that it was interesting how you evolved on this thing. And when you came around to doing the Beat Baseball thing, it was like you had all this passion and you focused it like a laser beam. It was really cool. Other ones I listen to, I'm a big, huge Keith and the Girl fan. I got to meet them in California, and though they never admit it, I'm friends with them somehow or another. They're actually a blast.
Yeah, they appear to be.
They're it's a trip. Podcast 411, you got to listen to that.
Oh, absolutely. Rob Walsh is amazing.
Yeah, he keeps you in touch with what podcasts are out there. And I also have a little spot on his show too on Saturdays. I do tech tips, which I think amuse and annoy people. Of course, then there are other ones too. I listen to Madge Weinstein. I think that there's the whole Madge Weinstein camp, as I said in my show, I think there's a lot more behind it than just a screaming lesbian.
Yeah.
And there's a lot there. In fact, I got to interview part of the Madge Weinstein camp. And there's not only the fact that there's a lot of creativity going on there, but, you know, like the blind taking advantage of that with the podcast and being able to get the word out. Madge Weinstein actually represents how another group of people who have been kind of downtrodden and not really recognized, the gay community, has been able to use podcasting to their advantage. And if people go out into like the gay community, there's a whole lot of stuff. You don't have to be gay to listen to it, by the way.
No.
They've got a ton of stuff that's really creative, and you can't... it's like, I didn't think that kind of stuff exists. I didn't even know that it didn't exist, and then you find it.
I haven't listened to it. I heard an interview between Madge and Fox from Fox in the City.
Yeah,
Reagan Fox. I thought that was hysterical. But I think one of the probably, and I think, is it wrong for me to say Q Potter?
No, Q Potter is actually, okay. If Q Potter org, QPotter.com, QPotter.org, is actually a group of people who are either gay podcasters or gay supporting podcasters, and I've always been supportive of the gays, and so actually Digital Media Cast Experiment is one of the Q-Potters because of the fact that we're supportive of the gay community.
There you go. Yeah. One of the funnier podcasts I've ever listened to is the PNS Explosion.
Oh, God! Those guys are nuts!
I think the funniest part that I've ever heard was Straight Talk.
I love Straight Talk.
Oh, my God.
PNS Explosion is like putting the shoe on the other foot.
Yeah.
And those guys are, I think, hilarious. And they're... the other thing, too, is that there's also other talents there. The Scott, who is part of that podcast, mm-hmm. The Quiet One, he's a web... he's a graphic designer, and he designed their website. And it's hilarious because when you go to their website, it screams gay. I mean, not just gay, not just... these are homosexuals. This is flaming gays. There's unicorns and explosions and wow, yeah, and yoga and all this kind of stuff. It's hilarious. But the thing was is that they made the thing work for them.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah, I think that...
Capitalizing on their audience.
Yeah, they're capitalizing on what they have, and I think that what they're doing, and this is what I think can work with Beat Baseball and a lot of other groups that haven't tried this yet, is that podcasting allows people to see more than, you know, for the gays, more than just the gay pride parade. They can see other things that are going on. Another one that's really good and solid is Feast of Fools, which is...
I haven't listened to that yet.
They do an excellent thing 5 days a week, but you would, and a lot of people would say, well, that's a gay podcast, so I can't listen to that. Well, with podcasting, you can listen in the secrecy of your own home. So you can listen to it,
well, you know,
and get
even the way
used to it before you have to admit it, you know.
Yeah, well, even,
and I say that sarcastically.
Yeah, even, well, yeah. So even the way that things are today, I mean, it's... You know, everyone has their own preferences and their own desires.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you gay or lesbian because or have lesbian thoughts because you're listening to Penis Explosion or Madge Weinstein. But it also doesn't make you a... Here you go. You're gonna like, you'll laugh at this one. It's also not going to make you a pedophile if you listen to Tim Henson with a distorted view.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. And I listen to Tim Henson, too. Let me see. What are the other ones I listen to?
I think I have to admit something.
Yeah.
He does on Tuesday the sex tactic.
Oh,
I want to know where he got Scott, that guy Scott, to do his voiceover in the beginning. And he goes, hey, mama.
Oh, that. Oh.
Sex
text. That was Scott Fletcher.
Really?
From I'm pretty sure that's Scott Fletcher from... I'm pretty sure that's Scott Fletcher from Podshack. I listened to him.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of some other ones I listened to. Andy Doan with the Beyond Science and Spaceship Radio.
Yep, I heard about him.
Andy Doan was an interesting one, too, because he wrote to me at one point, and he was in support of something I said. I was bitching about something or another. I think people with spyware. And so I listened to it, and I had to admit that I was not particularly interested in listening to something called Spaceship Radio because I'm just not into the sci-fi thing that much. I really got hooked on it because... what he's done is he's resurrected a whole bunch of old radio shows, old radio dramas, and I think it's absolutely wonderful what he's done, and I've become a fan of his, and it was kind of strange, and it's not like he said, you should listen to my show, I just, you know, I listened to it just out of courtesy because he wrote me, and I was really surprised and pleased with what he did there. Another one I listened to is Skepticality.
Swoopy and Derek.
Swoopy and Derek, yeah. I got to meet Swoopy at both PodcasterCon and at the Expo, and I got to finally talk to Derek at the PodcasterCon, which that was kind of interesting because now that he's on rehabilitation, one of the things they had to do was teach him how to talk, and I think he's originally from up your neck of the woods in New Jersey or something like
that. Yeah, I think so.
And he's been taught by guys from Georgia.
And so, you mentioned that one of his shows.
Yeah, now he's going to have a Georgian accent, you know. So that's the
I love peaches.
Oh, that was that's funny. Another one, too, that was actually way before I ever found Skepticality was one called Pop Goes the Culture, done by Susie Watson and Barbara Luring.
Right.
And those two are really good, and they've had some really great topics about popular culture. And there have been many times, in fact, I got to meet Barbara at PodcasterCon, too, which was really a treat because there are many times I've talked to her at the speaker, you know, Barbara, what about this, blah, 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 you know, and their podcast is something I think is really wonderful, and I finally got to hear that. Let me think of some other ones.
What's an ideal time of the day that you have the opportunity to listen to these podcasts? Because you just rattled off about 10.
Oh, and there are actually more of them, too. It's just that I can't remember all of them because I, my brain has started to slip some. But where I listen to them, it depends on what I'm doing, and it depends on what's going on that week. Lately, I've not been able to listen to as many because I've been working on a lot of proposal stuff. But in the car, although I don't have a very long drive, so that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I'm working on... you know, on programming, depending on what kind of programming I'm doing, I like to listen to it then, and then I can listen to gobs of it. And my favorite thing now to do is on Saturday mornings, I wake up and usually have dishes to do from the night before because I, you know, fall asleep on Fridays. And so I'll do that, make my breakfast with my laptop out, and I'll be listening to podcasts in the kitchen, and the kids are starting to get used to it.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
3 and 6.
So you, as a parent of a boy and a girl,
mm-hmm.
you named some pretty out there podcasts that certainly would contain a lot of explicitives and descriptions of I don't know, exhibitionist style sex and stuff. How do you handle that with your kids? I mean, yeah, especially your 6-year-old.
Steve, it ain't nothing compared to what their old man does. No, actually, you know, that's a really good question, and that's something that I've actually brought up before. One of the things that, for an example, my little girl, when she was 4 years old, she and I watched Blazing Saddles, and the reason for that was because we had watched Willy Wonka, the original one, a bazillion times, and I just got tired of watching it one time, and I said, hey, do you want to watch something else with Gene Wilder in it? And it was Blazing Saddles, which is one of my favorite films.
Great movie.
Now, that one people would say is mature content. Subject content.
Sure.
Because of the fact that they use the N-word in their gratuitous.
Sure.
Well, actually, I don't think they do it gratuitously. They do it a lot.
Yeah.
But I sat her down, we watched it, and I explained to her that the point being made by Mel Brooks in this case was how ridiculous racism was.
Yeah.
And since then, I've always tried to teach my kids how... You know, first of all, you're not going to protect them from this stuff forever. They're going to have to learn it somehow. And I'd rather they hear it from their foul-mouthed dad as opposed to someone else who doesn't know what they're talking about. At least I can put my spin on it. So, you know, granted, my kids do sometimes... Now, I don't... There are certain things I don't let them listen to. You know, if I'm listening to Keith and the Girl and it gets too raunchy, or sometimes Madge gets a little bit raunchy. But there are some things that I think I can watch with them or see with or listen to with them and explain it to them. And we've gotten it to the point where my daughter especially, who's the one who's talking the most, I can say to her, that's not a good thing. You know, you should not, you know, whatever they're saying. And I won't say it here to be polite. But,
I know what you mean.
And she gets it. And I think that what's going to happen is she's going to be a lot better able to take care of the world than somebody who has hidden away.
Yeah.
You know, the kids. Some parents like to hide their kids away from evil. I frankly think that's bullshit. And I don't intend to do that. And I feel that my capability of being able to deal with the world had a lot to do with the fact that I had older cousins who exposed me to that stuff.
Sure.
And now I'm only partially warped as opposed to some kind of a maniac in jail someplace.
You mentioned a great...
At least yet.
Yeah, right? You mentioned a great, brilliant name, especially within the movie industry, Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, you look at him with his creation of Blazing Saddles, To Be or Not to Be, Men in Tights, Spaceballs, and just to name a few of the movies, even History of the World Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then his also creation of the remake of The Producers.
Mm-hmm.
Could you possibly fathom what his podcast, if he did one, could be like?
I think that would be, first of all...
He's just naturally hysterical, I think.
The thing that I think would be really amazing is the guests he would have. I mean, when he wrote Blazing Saddles, one of the writers on that was Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And actually, from what I understand, Richard Pryor wrote the white guy lines, and Mel Brooks and a couple of the other white guys wrote the Black Bart lines.
Oh, wow.
But the other thing, too, is that what I would hope that his podcast would be is where I could be a fly on the wall while he's in his creative mode. I think that he's real. You know,
did you ever see him in the interview of the 1,000-year-old man?
I did not. No, I have not.
If you ever get a chance, watch it, because you'll think that it's a long-lost uncle of Madge Weinstein. I mean, him and his wife, Anne Bancroft, who's recently passed.
Yeah.
Both of them together as actors were just incredible, brilliant minds together. You know, and again, this is not a plug, but if you ever get a chance to watch the movie with your kids, To Be or Not to Be. It's a great movie. It's not a lot of negative language in it.
Yeah.
But it's just a funny movie. I mean, and of course, the original movie of The Producers was hysterical too. But when he remade it on Broadway, it was a work of art.
You're talking about the one with Zero Motzel and Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, and the funny thing was if you think about when that was made, that was back when Zero Motzel was really hot for Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Gene Wilder, I think at the time, was kind of an up and comer. And by the way, Gene Wilder wasn't even one of the people Gene had to fight to get onto. Blazing Saddles. Mel wasn't going to cast him in the spot. And then I guess that the guy who they had playing it was actually really a drunk and did kind of... I almost think he died or something like that. But Gene got the spot. But at the same time, I think Mel is great. And I kind of wish... I wonder who's going to be the Mel Brooks of podcasting. You know, will there be one?
that's...
Is there one already?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think, honestly, if I had to pick somebody out today, what they do, I think Keith and the girl probably are that type of comedy.
That could be so. I mean, because that... I'll have to think about that one. But yeah, that could be so. Because, I mean, Keith and Hemda really do have a... they have a natural talent, and if you hang around with them, you find out that there is something going on. Like, their heads are still always going at the same time. I spent the weekend with them, and I think Keith and Bruce Murray and I... Bruce Murray is another podcast that, like, Zedcast.
Right, Zedcast from Canada, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. From Canada. And so Bruce and
Canada.
Keith and the guys from Libsyn and... I can't remember which one of the vendors. We closed the party at 4:30 in the morning.
That's a good
and
thing.
The whole time, Keith was on. I mean, Keith just is naturally a funny guy, and Hemda's really a natural performer.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of people say, you know, well, gosh, they're kind of assholes on their show sometimes. In real life, they're actually nicer. In fact, I was really surprised because I... did not prearrange to meet with them. I said, you know, I'd like to meet you at the expo, but that was about it. But I ran into them while they were having dinner with Michael Haston, who was the guy who took all those people like Keith and PK and Jay, or Keith and the girl, PK and Jay, Tim Henson and stuff, out to Ontario, California. And I ran into them, and Keith said, "Oh, it's Michael Carino. Let me go show you to the girl." And so they're sitting at the head of the table, and they dragged me in. I said, "Well, I'm not part of the dinner. I'll just wait. You know, I can, you know, talk to you later, you know, and stuff." They take me up to the head of the table. They sit me down and start talking to me. All these other people who, you know, earned their way to the table are sitting there, and they were really cool, and I hung out with them for just about the entire weekend, although I think they did find a poker game that I didn't attend at one point, but that was fine with me because I ended up hanging out with the guys who did the poo-poo player.
Yeah.
So that was cool. There were a lot of cool people there.
You have any words of wisdom for new podcasters or people who are... they're intimidated because, one, they don't have an iPod, or two, they don't know damn thing, one, because they're not a computer techie. They call themselves a computer techie because they're good on AOL. I mean, they can instant message 6,000 people at the same time and never get lost. I mean, do you have, I mean, someone who's a non-technical person, I mean, for them just to, and you gave some cheap ways in your last show on how to do things when creating MIDI music and stuff like that, but say someone new wants to get into a podcast, what would be a few words of that would generate sparks for them to go out and do it?
Well, the first thing I think would be is to keep it simple. A lot of times, what I have found, for example, when I really need to get something done with the podcast, I pull out the IFP 899, just like what you have here,
right?
And I plug it in and I go with it. You know, I you don't have to have really expensive equipment. You don't have to have the greatest microphones. I think if you have something that's solid, a couple of simple, solid tools, that's the first thing I would get. The second thing is that I think that if you keep it real, now that sounds like a real cliche, but one of the things that I think hurts a lot of podcasters is that when they think to themselves, well, this is the image of what I think a show should be like, because this is what I heard on the radio. In fact, one of the things that always bothers me, with very few exceptions, is when people say, well, this is my radio show. Well, no, it's not radio. It's podcasting. I think it's better than radio. Radio is something else, and if you're trying to imitate that, then go into radio. Don't go into podcasting unless it's a spoof on something. Like Madge Weinstein's Yeast Radio is a spoof on radio. Okay, well, then that's cool. Even Keith and the girl, and I love them to death, but sometimes they'll say, well, we'll do a radio show, and I even wrote them. I said, you don't want to be on radio because you don't want to be poor.
Exactly.
but the other thing, too, is commit a lot of time, or, you know, be aware that it takes a lot of time. I'm finding that out the hard way as well, and I do have a pretty rigorous podcasting schedule, but you have to be realistic about the time. And then the other thing, I think, is that if you have a format, you know, sometimes you let the form, not always, but sometimes you have to let the format lead the be led by what you have as far as material goes. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples. Madge Weinstein will many times just have, you know, a grab bag of crap that she's going to play, and she'll make the show different one day than she will with the other, depending on what she has available to her. You know, I'll do that with the Digital Media Cast Experiment, although a lot of times I'm experimenting anyway. There's a guy named Steven Gura who did the same thing, too, where he had, you know, he had something that worked for him, and he made change the format of his show to fit something that was a greater calling. And I think that that was a really smart move. There's no one out there saying that, you know, if you were signed to a contract to do the podcast this way, or at least if you have... By then, you probably should have figured out the format. But right. For the rest of us, no. If the content starts to make the format go a different way, flow with it a little bit. See what happens with it. Don't feel like you have to make the thing sound like the radio station near your hometown. Frankly, you're going to be better than that anyway, because radio, the way it's done right now, sucks. So, why would you want to do that?
In my last two interviews that I've done, and they've been more appropriately with beatball players, I'm going to put you through the same two-minute drill, but I'm going to give you different questions.
Okay.
I did that. So just give me the first answer that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Favorite podcast?
Keith and the Girl.
Mainstream radio. Fading away within 20 years?
The way it is now. I don't think that the technology is going to go away. I think that the way it's handled now is going to go away. I think that's the same way a typewriter. There are still typewriters sold. But the thing is, though, is that they're used differently than they are now.
Sure. Politician that's more in favor of podcasting than you would ever would expect before.
The only politician I know who's actually into podcasting right now is John Edwards, so I have to say him.
Okay. And podcasts that you'd like to see?
Podcasts that I'd like to see. Oh, geez. The show that's all about the stuff I like. That's a good question. God. I've had such a fun time going through the smorgasbord of stuff that's there. I haven't been wanting for something yet.
First thing comes to mind.
A Rolling Stones podcast done by the real Rolling Stones.
Wow. That would be absolutely amazing.
I would like that.
All right, so last question. I'm going to rattle off a series of teams.
Okay.
And not because you know I play with the Long Island Bombers, but I want you to pick a team that you think is going to win the World Series in 2006 here in Strongsville.
Okay.
The list of teams are Taiwan Home Run, Kansas All-Stars, Austin Blackhawks, Chicago Comets, A, Chicago Comets, B, Boston Renegades, Long Island Bombers, Houston Bayou City Heat, Cleveland Scrappers, Columbus Vipers, Indianapolis Thunder, Chicago Bluff, Tyler Tigers, who am I forgetting? West Coast Dogs, I think that's about it. Stockton Stingrays.
I have to go with the Long Island Bombers. Even though I'm from Cleveland, I'll tell you something. The thing that got me about it was that I went visited the website, and the thing that I loved about the logo that you guys have is that it looks very New York baseball-ish. And so just by that, and I realize that's kind of a PNS Explosion type of response there, but I like your logo.
Okay.
It's cool.
Just for all intents and purposes, so you know, for factual reasons,
yeah.
Every time the Long Island Bombers have played the Cleveland Scrappers, unfortunately, we lost. However, the closest game that we played with them was last year in Houston, and we lost to them in extra innings 6-5.
Now, what the hell are the Scrappers doing in the blind league? Why don't they go teach the Indians how to do something, for Christ's sake?
Well, who knows if they're not already, you know? Everybody, thank you for listening to the Beat Baseball Podcast. As always, if you want to contact us via email, you can reach us by emailing us at beatbaseball@gmail.com. Thank you again for Michael Carino for joining us on the Beat Baseball Podcast. And we'll see you next time at the ballpark.